And in what ways are you working to determine itself?
Well, we are trying every kind of outreach that we can think of to get a wide swath of the community involved with this. And so we have, ever since last August, we've been putting on public events to educate about topics like peak oil. And we've been hosting speakers. We've been having classes that people can come to on a weekly basis. There's one going on right now. And we're about to start a big push for organizing in neighborhoods, or actually helping people within neighborhoods organize their own neighborhoods.
Yeah, I was looking at your website, and that's Transition Santa Cruz. And on the website, there's a list of upcoming classes. And there's one ongoing now. It's Resilience.
Yes.
And that's through September 2nd on Wednesday nights at the Loudon Nelson Center.
6:30 at Loudon Nelson. Yeah, and you're welcome. Everybody's welcome to drop into that class. It's called Building Community Resilience. And even though I'm not the one leading the class, I've been coming every time because it's so much fun to get together with a group of local people who are psyched to be hopeful about the prospects for the future and who want to have a Santa Cruz of their dreams.
Oh, and what are some of the dreams that you're sharing there?
Well, as we look at the realities of the coming 50 to 100 years, it's clear that we won't have business as usual, that things will be very different in the coming period than they have been, let's say, in the last 50 to 100 years.
And that's due to global warming, the collapse of the economy.
And the peaking of oil and other energy resources, mm-hmm. which is the one we end up doing the most amount of education about because it's a very confusing area. But what people have been thinking about in the transition movement is, you know, if we don't have this incredible source of cheap energy that oil represents, or if we can't really use that anyway because of global warming and needing to stop burning all this oil, uh-huh. then what will we do instead? And really what the answers come down to is that we need to get to know each other. We need to get to know our neighbors, and we need to start doing things more for ourselves here. Mm-hmm. We need to have a thriving local economy and community, and not, for example, to mention a very topical topic, not be dependent on some faraway corporation for our health care, as if they even did a good job of it, which they don't.
So based on profit, too.
Yeah, and if we have businesses and services based in our local community, then it gives us a much better shot at having something that's really accountable to the people here locally and what we would like to see happen, instead of some distant corporation that's really accountable to shareholders.
Mm-hmm. So that's quite a challenge.
Yes, it is.
And that could involve, what are you doing to bring, are you working on local entrepreneurship and maybe a barter system of sorts, or
mm-hmm. well, we're
what are some of the ideas?
Maybe crazily so, but we're trying to work on every front.
Great. Don't you have different working groups?
Yes.
I was looking at the website,
That's why it's not completely crazy, is because...
Not at all. People jump in where their interests lie.
Exactly. So there's... Just to back up for a second, we are coordinating this project with a small group called the Steering Group, which is about 7 people. And really that's a group that just thinks about how can we keep this whole project of relocalization and transition, how can we keep it moving forward and have it make sense and be true to the vision. But a lot of the other specific work is being done, and we expect much more of it to be done, by specific working groups of people who are interested in specific things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we had several events in January on the local food supply, and that was very exciting to a lot of people, and they turned out in droves for our events. And then we asked them who would like to be part of an ongoing working group on the food supply in Santa Cruz County. And a bunch of people signed up. And so now there's a food working group within Transition Santa Cruz that meets regularly. And what a working group does, including the food working group, is basically two main things. One is to develop a plan, a long-term plan for Santa Cruz that could become policy eventually in the county or the city. And the other is to do things, really tangible things, to do projects and put on events that attract attention to what we're doing and that start us moving in the right direction. So, for example, the food working group puts on events like a few months ago we had something called a Grow Food Party Crew, where a whole bunch of people, I forget how many throughout the day, I think about 50 people, converged on one person's house and with combined labor put in a food garden that would have taken, you know, that the person who lived there would have taken weeks to put it in. In one day, boom, there was a food garden right there.
I think that was at the home of one of our programmers, too, Teresa.
Teresa Caraggio.
Caraggio, she's not, yes.
Yes.
And wasn't, and who came down? Didn't an organization or group from San Francisco come down? So there's collaboration with other groups, or was it all local?
The Grow Food Party?
Yes.
No, that was the inspiration for that event came from a guy named Devin Slavin, who had lived in Santa Cruz some time back and then had moved down to Ventura and, of all places, had had a lot of success with his Grow Food Party crews down there in Ventura, putting in gardens in various people's homes. And then he returned. He moved back to Santa Cruz. And as soon as he hit town, he heard about us and came to our food events and said, I want to do a Grow Food Party.
Wow. Yeah. So they came. So a number of workers from, what is it called again? Grow Food?
The Grow Food Party Crew.
Grow Food Party Crew came in and planted edible plants and vegetables.
So we built three raised beds in the backyard and filled them with soil and planted vegetables right into them. We put in some fruit trees. We put in a chicken run right there. I mean, this whole thing used to be just a lawn, basically, in their backyard.
Oh, my gosh.
And in the front yard, we pulled out some aging trees and put in some other useful plants in the front yard. So basically, you know, setting up that particular house to be a little more self-reliant with food, and also putting Teresa and her family in a position of sharing with the neighbors mm-hmm. when they have excess.
Did they come in for free or?
Yeah, it's a volunteer, like all of Transition Santa Cruz. It's a volunteer project, and people were psyched to be there. Because
I bet.
Because people are hungry right now in our culture mm-hmm. to actually work together on something that's hopeful and really mm-hmm. useful. And, you know, so much of our lives are dictated by, you know, what we have to do in order mm-hmm. to survive. And most of us work to some degree in jobs that we wouldn't necessarily choose or that don't mm-hmm. completely make sense to us. And at the same time, we see conditions getting worse around us. Mm-hmm. And people really want to get engaged with something meaningful.
And that's why you're here.
Right.
I feel that way. And when I learned it, I think I read an article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about 3 months ago about the mm-hmm. party. And then there was another article in the Metro. And got to get this guy on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank goodness you're here. Sure, it's really a pleasure and an honor. But how did Transition get started? I know in England, but...
Yeah.
I'm just a little curious to go over the history.
Well, actually, to trace the history back, this movement is an outgrowth of permaculture, which started in the late 60s, early 70s in Australia. So I'm really giving you the full history here. And permaculture was started because of mostly because of Bill Mollison and another guy named David Holmgren, who realized that, you know, human settlements could work as well as natural communities do. For example, a forest or a meadow that's left undisturbed is an ecosystem that has a lot of resilience, has a lot going on creatively, and a lot that is working elegantly together. And yet our human communities so often don't look that way. So permaculture was developed as a way of analyzing how could we work as well as a natural community at its best. And some very brilliant thinking has developed within permaculture. Then, jumping forward to 2005 or so, a man named Rob Hopkins, who was teaching at a university in Kinsale, Ireland, was a permaculture teacher and offered the first year-long university permaculture course ever there, permaculture design course. And right about that time, he saw a movie called The End of Suburbia. Maybe some listeners have seen this movie. And The End of Suburbia is really worth checking out if you have Netflix or whatever.
The End of Suburbia.
The End of Suburbia is a movie that kind of lays out some of the reasons why our present way of life cannot continue because it's based on this constant flow of cheap oil. And
can you highlight some of the...
Sure. I mean, the suburban lifestyle in particular, which blossomed in the United States, Australia, and elsewhere in the 1950s, the post-World War II era, is this basically car-dependent architecture. Mm-hmm. You know, the suburbs are built to be accessed by car, and people wanted some of the values of living in the country without actually being rural people. You know, people had jobs in the city or like their urban lifestyle, but they wanted the peacefulness of living in the country. And it was possible, at least it seemed possible at first, by building these suburbs out into the countryside and all these little streets that go out into the suburbs. But now we've become locked into this suburban lifestyle where there's really no choice in many cases, unless you live right in an urban zone. But to drive out there and drive to your job and public transportation is really not up to that task. And
it's practically sort of minimal.
Built into the architecture of the place. So with the future of oil being what it is, which is now permanently, we think, on a downslope of supply. Mm-hmm. And I can talk more about that later. But certainly slated to become more and more expensive as time goes forward. It won't really be possible to continue that lifestyle.
It's also expensive and very damaging to the land itself.
Well, of course, and the most blatant example of that perhaps is global warming, climate change, which now threatens human survival. So
and all survival.
And survival of most forms of life as well. So, so this movie, The End of Suburbia, kind of paints a nice picture of that, maybe a little bit in dire tones, but sometimes that's useful as a wake-up call.
It is.
So Rob Hopkins in Kinsale, Ireland, as luck would have it, was one of those rare individuals that can watch a movie like that and feel inspired to take action instead of plowed under with hopelessness.
Like yourself.
And so he showed the movie to his students, and everybody was shocked, and they decided to do a study of their town, Kinsale, Ireland, and how it could make a transition to living in a way that really makes more sense and is not so dependent on oil. So they broke up into teams, sort of like working groups, and they studied every aspect of life there in Kinsale, you know, how they get their food, how they get around, and, you know, they also have some tourism like we have here, you know, how will that be affected by the end of cheap oil? And they looked at all these questions and they made a plan, which was subsequently adopted by their city, the equivalent of their city council.
Wow.
And that became the first, what we call, energy descent action plan. And so that was the template for all the transition initiatives which are happening in maybe 800 cities now worldwide, something like that, doing the same sort of process to prepare for these changes.
How inspiring. And that's what you're working on now here in Santa Cruz.
That's right.
Our own version of that.
Right.
And the input coming from those that live here, obviously.
Yes.
And our climate is different. Our needs are different. Our wants are different.
Yeah, and really the whole idea...
So it's unique.
Yeah, the whole idea of these initiatives is that they have to be unique because let's say that somehow somebody, me or somebody, could come up with the perfect plan for the transition of Santa Cruz beyond oil. A wonderful, you know, brilliant plan. It wouldn't really be very useful because if it's coming from one person or from the outside or from the top, it doesn't stand very much chance of being implemented. politicians can't propose some of the changes that are really needed and expect to be reelected, because these are really radical changes. And so really they have to come up from the grassroots.
They do, because they're also working against those that are entrenched in power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're often not able to make any movement at all.
Well, yeah, and I think it's useful to look at a couple of aspects. It's those who are entrenched in power and have vested interests in keeping things the way that they are. Not that that will be actually possible in the long run, but that's...
They're working hard to do that.
They're working hard. But I think there's another side that's worth looking at, too, which is that there's our own resistance to change.
To accept... Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, for me, when I saw Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth, and thought about the implications of it, I was scared enough to... I wasn't like Rob Hopkins, actually. I was scared enough to not be able to figure out much to do for about a year.
Uh-huh. I had a similar reaction.
Yeah, and I think that facing the... I mean, crisis at this point is kind of upon us in a way that can be very daunting, and people naturally would like to stay with what feels secure and familiar, even if it's not working particularly well. And, you know, nobody needs to be blamed for that. It's sort of a human tendency. So I think that we need to face our own resistance to the things that need to be done now, too.
Well, so much needs to be changed, and there's so much interdependence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it can seem overwhelming. Where do you begin?
Mm-hmm.
Before, so that we can have some control over the changes.
Yes.
And we can guide them in a way that is more sustainable, mm-hmm, overall.
Mm-hmm.
So to get back to what you're doing locally here,
mm-hmm,
I would love to hear more about the working groups and the individuals that have been involved, and how you actually got involved again.
Okay, well, for me personally, somebody sent me an email back last spring of last year, and it had a little link to this transition thing that was happening over in England, and so that's how I learned about this in the first place. And the email said something like, these people over in England, they're responding in an effective way to climate change and to peak oil, and they're having a party doing it. And I was like, what? Having fun doing it? That's worth looking into, you know? And so then I kind of poked around and read the websites that were out there, and eventually got a hold of the book, which many people are using to guide these transition initiatives. It's called The Transition Handbook by Rob Hopkins. And you can get it through Bookshop Santa Cruz.
And any bookstore.
What's that?
Any bookstore.
Any bookstore, especially if it's locally owned.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I thought that's why you'd emphasize Santa Cruz.
That's a very, very inspiring book. And so having that in my hands, I set out to find other people who might be interested in doing this. And I just called people up. You know, for example, I called Ross Clark, who's the man who has a part-time position working on climate change preparation for the city of Santa Cruz. And I called up Elizabeth Thompson, who at the time was the climate action coordinator for Ecology Action here in Santa Cruz. And I just called whoever I could think of that might be interested in this. I went to the People Power Steering Committee meeting and announced that this is something that I wanted to do. And pretty soon I had a little group of people who were interested, and it turned out that Elizabeth Thompson and another guy, Michael Weaver, had already been planning to try to start something, and they hadn't really gotten underway yet. And so
had they heard of transition before?
They already knew about transition and wanted to start something. In fact, Michael Weaver is the West Coast representative for the publishing company that puts out the Transition Handbook.
Huh.
And he had been inspired enough by that particular book that he wanted to start a transition initiative in Santa Cruz. So me and Michael and Elizabeth and a couple of other people became the core group that started the project.
Wonderful. And I was looking at your website, and you had specific in your mission, specific goals, values.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was relocalization, developing local self-reliance and meeting human needs. And one area you're doing that in is with the urban gardens, mm-hmm. urban sustainable gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And then community regeneration, reestablishing our local interdependence and reclaiming our power over our lives in our neighborhoods, communities, in workplaces. So in what areas are you, or in what ways are you bringing people together? I know in the neighborhoods with the gardens, and do you have workshops on transportation alternatives,
mm-hmm.
bicycles, maybe having more bicycle paths we need here. Mm-hmm. And that's something I need to join and get involved in, because I love to bike too.
Yeah, we do have a transportation and land use working group now.
Oh.
We did a few events on that topic last month, or in June, actually. And now there's a little working group that's working on that, creating policy and events around that. But, yeah, I mean, our activities have been divided between things that are more on the sort of community education side, like maybe having a film or a speaker and then having people discuss things with each other right there at the event. And then other events which are more action-oriented.
But do they break out into teams and start creating movement, doing something practical after hearing a speaker or watching a film?
The thing that's been most useful for that has been our two community workshops, which have been done in a format called Open Space, with capital O and a capital S.
Open space.
It's a wonderful way of including everybody in designing a day-long workshop. So, for example, in June, on June 20th, on the transportation and land use question, we had an open space workshop, which we held at First Congregational Church up on High Street. And people who were interested in this topic showed up. And the question of the day is, was basically something like, how will we residents of Santa Cruz get around in the coming decades in light of, you know, all the changes that are coming down, and mm-hmm. where will we travel to?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, you know, kind of broad and vague. And then we announced at the start of the day that all the breakout group topics would be proposed by the people attending. And then we, as the organizers, just sat down, and people stood up and announced what they would like to talk about. And all those topics went up on a schedule for the day. We had a morning session and an afternoon session. And then people broke up into little groups and brainstormed and talked about whatever they whatever they wanted to talk about. And so from out of that, some ideas were generated. In one day, it's difficult to necessarily pull together the group that's really going to carry ideas forward and make sure they mm-hmm. happen, but it sort of plants a seed, and then mm-hmm. the people who wanted to continue from that day forward joined in with the transportation working group, which is now an ongoing group.
Wow. And at the end of the day, did a representative from each group talk about what was discussed in their group? Just,
you know,
so
we,
everyone had kind of an overview.
We did that in January for our food open space workshop, and we did it a little bit differently with the transportation day. We didn't actually have that presented at the event itself, but for both open space days, we put everything that was noted down during all the breakout groups into a document, which is on our website, by the way.
Oh.
So that everybody who participated or didn't participate can read, at least in some kind of, you know, outline form, what was talked about at all of the breakout meetings.
Great. So it's so grassroots. Everything I ask you, it's very exciting.
Right. And
it really is.
The idea of
the creativity that's flourishing that we have right here.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's really the idea that we have enough capacity to figure things out here. We have mm-hmm. kind of a genius of our community when we put our heads together. And if as many people as possible are involved with actually designing things, then there will be community support for for the changes.
So there are many areas that people can get involved in.
Yeah.
There's so many. And if someone wants to create something new that's important to them, they can go into transition and see if there's anyone else who's interested in their idea, whatever that is. And then the next, what do you call these themes?
And a part of our mission statement?
On part of your mission statement.
Yeah.
I love all of them. They're so dear to my heart.
Oh, good.
Oh, very much so. When I saw the website, I was thrilled. And these aren't just words. This is very concrete. And then sustainability, meeting our needs without degrading the ecosystem for future generations. That I take very seriously for our future seven generations and more to come. And how, I know, well, the gardens is one area that you're working in that. And what other, are there any other groups right now?
Right now, we only have two working groups. We have the food working group and the transportation land use working group.
Uh-huh.
There's one which is about to form, which is a neighborhood organizing working group, which we're not sure really what it'll end up to be. But someone came forward and volunteered to lead this effort, and I'm very excited about this because I think this is really the next thing that we want to put attention on, which is how to get people talking about these things in all the neighborhoods in Santa Cruz and getting to know each other and getting to work side by side within the neighborhoods. Because, you know, as we all know, one of the unfortunate features of suburban and often urban life are that people are isolated and they don't even necessarily know their neighbors.
I know. So I live in a condominium complex and feel that. I try to get to know people, but I'm busy and I'm running in and out. And
yeah, between our busyness of our lifestyles and actually the architecture, the way that it's built, it doesn't encourage knowing each other and being in community that well in most cases. And so with this neighborhood working group, we want to spawn a lot of community meetings in neighborhoods. And there's a very inspiring project in Portland, Oregon, which for me is a kind of model of something like what we might want to do. And that's called City Repair. And you can Google that and look at their website. And what they do basically is help people bring together their neighborhoods and improve them actually in tangible ways. So first, people need to meet and get to know each other and maybe have potlucks and just be comfortable being in the same room with each other and then start to dream about, you know, what could we do to make our neighborhood a better place?
So how do you start? Do you distribute flyers saying there's going to be a meeting, you can meet at a rec center, or how do you intend
Yes, you can. I mean, I think every which way.
You're knocking on doors and saying, would you be interested or not in this? What would you be interested in having?
Yeah.
Would you want to help us in that way?
Yeah, and so in terms of how people can get involved with the Transition Santa Cruz, that's one great way. If you are interested in doing that in your neighborhood and would like some support, we'd like to hear from you. And then we can talk about how we can support you and make it happen.
And what phone numbers can they call?
Well, they can call me. I'm willing to give out my number on the air.
Sure.
My name, once again, is Michael, and my phone number is 427-9916.
Great. And if you'd like to talk to Michael now directly on the radio and be on the air or not, you can call us here at 427-3772 or 469-3119. And again, we're talking with Michael Levi of Transition Santa Cruz, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. And as always, we need donations. And you can mail those to FRSC PO Box 7507 Santa Cruz 95061. And again, if you want to talk with Michael now, you can call us here at 427-3772 or 469-3119. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and I want to chime in about the donations.
Sure.
That, you know, local radio, which includes, you know, our local public radio stations and in a special way, free radio stations, because of the kind of latitude that you have in a non you know, non-NPR radio station like this, not to necessarily diss everything that NPR does, but there's a kind of independence here that is really, really valuable. And so nothing could be more transition-y than supporting local radio and Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you for that, Michael. And that's why I'm here. We can pretty much share the truth and find ways that we can work to shift what we see happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you doing economically to change our dependence on the banking system as it is now? Are there any working groups? I was thinking of bartering systems or even establishing a local currency. That's of an interest. And also taking care of your third, where is it here, or fourth goal in the mission statement, which I found was about equity. Meeting the needs of all people, and that includes the elderly, children, each and every person. If there's a need, no one should go for want.
Mm-hmm.
No one should. I work with hospice, and no one should be dying alone, mm-hmm. suffering alone. Mm-hmm. How can we take care of those that are unable to take care of themselves too? That's a lot.
Yeah,
I realize, but I was struck by that also in the mission statement.
Yeah,
it's so encompassing.
Yeah, about the
a lot of thoughts
about the economics. Obviously, we need a new economic system. Our current economic system is not only based on this cheap fuel system. In the globalized economic system assumes that you can ship things quickly all over the place and that resources can be transferred from here to there easily.
It's a great expense, though.
It's a great expense. It's a great impact on the climate, and it will become more expensive, and it makes us into a non-resilient community. Resilience is one of our real, you know, watchwords. Resilience basically means that if something comes along and shoves you, like let's say the end of cheap oil or climate change, you don't just fall over because you're sturdy. And so a globalized economy is not really sturdy, you know. We're much more sturdy as a community if we're strong locally. And so it's really relevant to replace the economic system. Another thing about our current economic system is that it's a debt-based economic system.
Yes.
Where money is created by banks out of thin air just by lending it and then charging interest on this invented money. And not only is it not fair, but it's not sustainable as a system. It sets up a requirement for endless growth, mm-hmm. and that's ecologically not sustainable. So we have these ideas, you know, within the transition movement of how things need to change. We haven't yet formed a working group here in Transition Santa Cruz on the economy, but we're looking to do that hopefully within the next year, definitely, to do some events focused on the economy. A local currency is a possibility. Many transition towns have done that already, mm-hmm. Begun a local currency. There have been, I think, three local currencies that got underway in the past here in Santa Cruz, which are no longer functioning. But maybe the time is ripe to do some kind of local currency again.
Certainly, you don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that we can change how we organize ourselves
mm-hmm.
and function. And to do it locally makes much more sense.
Mm-hmm.
We have that control.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can demonstrate that to other communities, which is part of transition
mm-hmm.
internationally. So in what area is anything being addressed to take care of our elderly or children working on our health care as well? That's a concern of mine.
Well, maybe you'll start the working
maybe
group.
Maybe I will. I have to start attending the meetings.
Yeah.
There's so many fronts.
Yeah. That is obviously a pressing need. So we would like to have a plan for that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, we're working on developing something called an Energy Descent Action Plan. We may come up with a sexier name than that, though. But that's what they've been called within the transition movement. So basically a plan that's fairly comprehensive, like the one that they did in Kinsale, Ireland, in the permaculture design course.
Right.
So basically a document that guides the process of change. And who knows, maybe at some point it will become an addendum or at least an influence on the general plan for the city and or the county of Santa Cruz. But basically, we're working on it piecemeal. So each working group develops what will be a chapter of this plan. And healthcare, for example, we want to have a chapter on healthcare and elderly care, how that's going to be taking place over the next 50 years or whatever.
So much is being cut, too, mm-hmm. in the state budget right now. It's, I think it's putting a lot of people in fear, unnecessarily mm-hmm. in shock. Mm-hmm. And those that can least afford to sacrifice are being asked to sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if they knew that there was a local resource, and that probably involves talking with our local representatives and the city council, too,
mm-hmm.
and maybe having small clinics where there isn't necessarily a doctor, but maybe med techs that have been trained just mm-hmm. to perform minor cursory functions. I can't think of any offhand. Maybe mm-hmm. minor physicals or sore throats and mm-hmm. checking vision, whatever. But
I like how you think. I really think that you should start this working group.
I'm quite busy, but you know, I have thought this through
mm-hmm.
because I just feel the expense of, I don't have health insurance right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more alternative. I see acupuncturists, massage therapists, uh-huh. chiropractors, take a lot of herbs and medicines, and those could be incorporated. There is an organization, what is it called? The Qi Center.
Hmm.
On East Cliff, and they're combining the two medicines.
Oh, right.
You may want to.
Yeah.
And they have
yeah.
a lot of classes and yoga, Pilates.
Mm-hmm.
And great.
Mm-hmm.
How important it is to be out in nature, too, and mm-hmm. hiking is a great
yeah.
little resource. There's so much in Santa Cruz. We're real mm-hmm. fortunate. And to draw upon what we do have here, and there's a lot of richness, and each group, I think, has a different piece of not the pie necessarily, but a different gift to offer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just our language sometimes, piece of the pie. Yeah. Now that means someone else can't have a piece. You know, let's work on changing our language.
What did George Bush say? Make the pie higher? Or something
oh,
like
dear.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. But why don't we just take a little break here? Let me see if I can.
Okay.
Let's see what I have for music right now.
Maybe while you're getting that, I could mention that if anybody would like to check out the Transition Santa Cruz website, it's at transitionsc, as in Santa Cruz, .org.
That we were just listening to Great Compassion Mantra, River of Light, Padmasavan, pardon the mispronunciation, Monjes Bautistas. I hope I didn't massacre that too much. But I'm here with Michael from Transition Santa Cruz, and we're going to talk a little bit more about energy descent, because I need to know more about it and the importance of it.
Right. I've been dropping this term, energy descent action plan, and without ever having really defined what that means, energy descent, or why. So, you know, as many people are aware of, fossil fuels are a finite resource, and oil it's a resource that has increased ever since the first oil well was drilled in around 1859. The amount of oil flow increased and increased and increased all the way up to about 2005. And then it hit a kind of a plateau. And this is interesting that around then, although the price of oil and gasoline, you might remember, continued to increase after 2005, that didn't correspond to more oil being produced, which you would expect if it's becoming, you know, more valuable. Then you would expect oil companies to produce more and more because they can make a lot of money from that. But no, actually, it plateaued. It went through some minor ups and downs, and it hasn't increased since then. And now, probably because of the recession, it's down. The production of oil is down. It may never return to the level of production that we had in 2005. But in any case, what's certain is that because oil is a finite resource, it will decline. And the same with other fossil fuels. So when people understand this, they often ask a question like, well, why can't we just shift over to a different energy supply? You know, many people are very excited about biofuels because, you know, it doesn't have to be pumped out of the ground. It's, in a sense, it's renewable because plants get that energy from the sun, and then you can grow more plants and make fuel out of them. And when you burn them, the carbon dioxide can return into the atmosphere and be absorbed by more plants. So on the face of it, it's very attractive. And actually, biofuels do make sense on a small scale, but there is not enough even possible production of biofuels to come anywhere close to the amount of energy that we use per year in the form of fossil fuels. If you try to approach the quantity of energy that we use with fossil fuels by growing biofuel crops, you would ruin the environment and heavily impact the food supply, which has already happened to some degree, is that land has been switched over to the production of corn for producing ethanol, and that's had an impact on the price of food, which impacts predominantly poor people around the world, such as in Mexico. The cost of tortillas tripled very quickly when that happened. Not necessarily just for that reason, but for several reasons, including that.
Was the corn in Mexico being grown for biofuels also, or it was more here in the States?
Well, with the globalized economy, the price of commodities is linked, right? And multinational corporations dump goods in Mexico. That actually has driven many of farmers out of business in Mexico, right? When the multinational corporations are able to supply cheap corn and drive subsistence farmers out of business in Mexico, then with those farms destroyed, when the price of corn goes up again or the supply is restricted because it's being used for ethanol production, then things become once again very more expensive than before.
But so can't they grow their corn? Isn't their corn then grown in Mexico? It's still being grown. It hasn't been turned over to biofuel.
I actually don't know if they're growing ethanol production in Mexico, but what I do know is that many of those farmers have been driven off the land. in Mexico.
As a result of the competition. So now.
Yeah, as a result of NAFTA, basically, and the how easy it is to, in the globalized economy, to move goods across borders without any regard to the effect that has on the local population. But in any case, to get back to the energy question, you know, people are, most of us are, it's scary to think of really a change of our lifestyle. And so we often think of, well, how can we continue our lifestyle? You know, maybe a different source of energy. And so many people have come to understand that growing corn for ethanol is not really the way to go. And so then you often hear people say, well, algae, you know, you can grow lots and lots of algae and you can make ethanol or biodiesel from algae. Well, there's many problems with algae too. It takes a lot of water, huge amounts of water to grow all that algae. That algae needs a lot of sun, and the places that are the most sunny generally have water scarcity.
Yeah.
So for each of these alternatives that's proposed, there are problems with trying to scale it up to the energy use that we have with fossil fuels. And really you end up with this inescapable conclusion, at least in my mind and those of us in the transition movement, that we're looking at a prospect of using less energy. And then things become really interesting once you start considering that, because we depend on our huge energy use in so many ways, and also our use of oil for other things, such as our whole food system, which is mostly not organic food supply in this country, is very heavily dependent on fossil fuels, not just for energy, but for making chemical fertilizers.
And just as an aside, very unhealthy.
Right. And so the other thing that comes up as you start to think about this is, well, you know, maybe there could be some good things about stopping this profligate use of energy. You know, how could our lives be better if we weren't burning through this incredible amount of energy all the time? Somebody estimated that in the United States, in order to accurately represent how much energy each one of us uses, it would be like having, I forget what the number was. Was it 30?
It's phenomenal.
30 slaves working for you all the time. I can't remember the number, but it's, we rarely realize how much energy we're using. If you think about the amount of energy in a tank of gasoline in your car, one way to picture it is to think, well, what if you had to push your car up your driveway? You know, how many people would it take working how hard? And that can be done with a couple of teaspoons of gasoline. It's an incredible, incredible energy resource that we've become used to.
Wasteful energy resource.
Well, yeah, I would agree that we don't actually need to use so much in order to have a very good life.
So where are you going with this?
So, well, basically the reason that I mention all this, it can sound negative to people to say, look, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that and that won't work. And many people think that that's a pessimistic outlook. But really, you know, I see it differently. It's important to look at what the real situation is.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you might be clinging on to something that's really not realistic and you know, wasting your energy going in the wrong way. And so, you know, starting from a realistic understanding of where we are, then we can really think of some wonderful ideas of what kind of transition we could make to the future. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you
Based
know,
on
we do education about peak oil and about the energy realities, because that's kind of a starting place for what we're dreaming about.
So what are some alternatives then that can have the same impact that oil does?
What do you mean by have the same impact? I'm not sure.
That can be as widespread and use. Well, are you saying that we should, or ideally, conserve more?
Well,
and or just be more locally sustainable.
Yeah, it really leads
us changing our lifestyles.
Yes, it really leads us
so
to the ideas of changing our lifestyles and once again relocalizing.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we're not going to be using so much energy and we won't be able to drive to the Silicon Valley to make the money to pay our mortgages on our mm-hmm. expensive houses here in Santa Cruz or rent, then...
Which use a lot of energy.
Yeah, then you know, how will we live? And that's what I'm interested in. It's like, where, you know, how will we arrange our housing if it's not going to be with these expensive mortgages and rents? You know, like, could we have affordable housing in Santa Cruz? And could people make enough money in Santa Cruz and not have to drive over to the Silicon Valley? Questions like that become very interesting.
And this is a real golden opportunity now to start looking at these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Many are in foreclosure mm-hmm. and exhausted trying to make a living.
Right.
In debt and working two, three jobs.
Yes.
Very little to show for it. Mm-hmm. The value of their homes have plummeted. They mm-hmm. owe more than it's worth, even mm-hmm. if they haven't yet foreclosed.
Mm-hmm.
The heaviness of that. I agree with you. It's so important to start looking at what we want.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time to do it
mm-hmm.
before it's out of our hands.
Right. Right now we're in this period where we actually still have quite a bit of infrastructure in place mm-hmm. that may not be in place in the future. We have fossil fuels still very much at our disposal. You know, one thing that's often forgotten is how much fossil fuel energy it will take to build alternative energy infrastructure. It won't be possible to build thousands of wind turbines and millions of solar panels with the energy produced by wind turbines and solar panels that don't yet exist. So mm-hmm. how will they be built with fossil fuel energy? So now mm-hmm. There's a really special opportunity right now to actually do a lot that may be harder to do later.
Absolutely. This is something that I haven't considered at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important key. It can put a halt to a lot of plans rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to end in about 5 minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to share beforehand? And we can give out the website address again and the present working sites.
Sure.
Working groups.
Once again, the website is transitionsc, that's SC as in Santa Cruz, .org. We currently have a food working group and a transportation and land use working group that's actually looking at questions of affordable housing now. And we're looking for all kinds of other working groups, such as water supply. You know, we probably won't want to continue using flush toilets. You know, what if everybody could have a composting toilet?
Why not?
Imagine how that would change our water needs. And, you know, is a desalination plant really a good idea? And all these things could be looked at by a water working group. And
yeah.
There could be, there's the neighborhood working group now forming, and there's the need for a youth working group to look at how young people's experience is going to be in this transitional time and how the educational system works. There's a need for a healthcare working group. Mm-hmm. It goes on and on.
It does.
And so people who are interested in any of these areas should contact us through the website. It's a very good way to reach us, transitionsc.org. Or they can call me, Michael, at 427-9916. And finally, one last thing I would like to say
sure.
is that what keeps me going with this and that I'd like to share with others is the idea of how much is possible. And oftentimes, yeah. you know, the first thing that gets us going is when we're shocked with something that's scary. And I know that happened for me and still at times comes up for me, you know, wow, this is a... The future looks scary, but really what keeps us going in the long run and what I think is true is looking at the incredible possibilities that we have in front of us now. And, mm-hmm. you know, oftentimes if you begin to talk hopefully about something, then it will bring up for people their feelings to the contrary. And mm-hmm. people say things like, oh, you know, dream on or something like that. And really, you know, we really have no idea what could happen in the future. It's not even worth our attention to think about what's likely to happen. It's more about what can we make happen? What's possible?
Yeah.
And that's what transition is all about.
Oh, and on that note, truly inspiring, and it is the truth. You're an example of that. The gentleman in Ireland, Gandhi. You don't know the impact that you'll have in taking that little step. And it becomes baby steps, adult mm-hmm. steps, and the next thing you know, you're running, and there are many others running along mm-hmm. with you.
Yes.
Well, thank you for listening, and this has been Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz, and I'm Janae. I've been your host, and Coralina will be on shortly with Cosmos Cruzmos. And again, thank you for listening.
Radio Libre Santa Cruz tiene espacio en el radio. Si quieres un programa, hay muchas posibilidades en que tú puedes llenar una hora o dos con tu música o tu plática. En el sitio web bigradio.org hay una aplicación en español. Contáctenos por internet. Escribe al FRSC en freakradio.org. Llámenos en 427-4523 y dejar un mensaje. O venga a una junta. Dos veces por mes en los domingos juntamos. Sea un Freak Radio DJ. Es la versión ilegal en que puede ser orgulloso.
On August 14th, the Gorilla Drive-In presents Bajo la Misma Luna in the Beach Flats Community Garden. El 14 de agosto presentamos Bajo la Misma Luna ahí en el jardín del Beach Flats de la playa, el jardín comunitario. La película recibió una destacada ovación en el Festival de Cine de Sundance de 2007 por su conmovedor y emocional cuento de una madre y un hijo que viven en lados opuestos de la frontera entre Estados Unidos y México y que están unidos por un amor duradero. As evidenced by the rapturous standing ovation the film received at its Sundance World Premiere, Patricia Riggen and scribe Ligia Villalobos touched some mighty powerful chords with their highly accessible story of a woman and her son separated by the U.S.-Mexico border. Gorilla Drive-In is free, outdoor, public space reclaiming,